This is Radio Olin, KROJ 101.5 on your radio dial, coming to you live from our studios at PubliSalud in the city of San Fernando. You're listening to Platicando y Mejorando, an inspiring program that promotes the health and well-being of our community through intellectual, physical, economical, political, and spiritual discussions with experts and leaders in these fields. Tune in every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. This is your host, Silverio Pelayo.
Good morning, everyone. This is Milan Sinek.
And Guyana Iskandarian.
How you doing, everybody?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah, I can't complain.
Well, thank you for joining me today. Today's a special show, since we have Milan here, who's been with PubliSalud now for a couple weeks, and you're visiting from?
From Montreal, Canada.
Montreal, Canada. So welcome.
Thank you, somebody.
Welcome to LA, to California. I wanted to start off the show by kind of just getting to know you a little bit better, since you are from Canada, from Quebec, from Montreal, sorry. And so, yeah, if you want to just give us a short kind of like just a little bit of a background on your story.
Yeah, sure. So, thank you for introducing me. So basically, I work as a registered nurse in a mental health institution in Montreal, Quebec, which is the French-speaking province in Canada. And I also have a background of studying history, politics, and sociology as well. So I'm currently here visiting PubliSalud, visiting San Fernando. I'll be here for one more month, I think, approximately. And I came here basically to do a kind of research and a kind of internship with you guys here to see what is being done in the field of prevention, drug addiction, tobacco prevention, alcohol prevention, as well as cannabis prevention here in Southern California and in greater LA. And the idea is to come here to see what is being done here, because California legalized cannabis consumption 1 year before Canada did. So the idea is to see what we can learn from you guys here and what is the general context of the cannabis market, let's call it like that, here in California, and what are the challenges that you have to face. So yeah, that is basically it. I'm doing that as a research at the University of Montreal, where I also...
Welcome again. And I can't help but notice you're wearing just a T-shirt, and Guyana here are wearing sweaters in this 55-degree weather. And I was just commenting earlier how this is probably nothing to you coming from Canada.
Yeah, this weather is what we call summer in Canada, you know? you guys find it really cold, but this is just perfect.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, so again, just grateful to be here. Again, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Happy to have you. Of course, Guyana, happy to have you as well. We had you on a previous show, a couple shows back, and I think it was a great discussion as well. And just to remind, so again, just a reminder for folks, right? PubliSalud is a drug and alcohol prevention, education, public health nonprofit, and among other things, right? On today's show, we were all having a discussion earlier, right, when we got here in the office. It was a bit, we covered a lot of different topics, but I think underlying the discussion was matters of democracy, truth, and justice, and all things good. So I'm hoping that on today's show, we can go ahead and continue that conversation see where it leads us. And I think it'll be a fruitful conversation. I wanted to start off with Milan. You had mentioned that you had visited San Francisco. I don't know, on a previous trip, I would assume.
Actually, it was my trip to come here.
Oh, I see.
Because I came here with my car.
Oh, that's right.
I've been driving for more than a week.
Yeah.
To get from the northeast coast of North America to stop there with my car, you know, in the middle of a day in downtown San Francisco. And I had a bad experience with, you know, someone breaking the one of the windows of my car and stealing some stuff from it. And you know, later on, of course, I called police officers, you know, and everything. And I saw their reaction. I saw in their reaction that they weren't surprised at all. Mm-hmm. And they told me that that occurs like hundreds of times every day in downtown San Francisco. They told me it's a very common thing, and that it's so common that people started, you know, when they leave their cars in downtown San Francisco, they leave their windows down, open, and they leave the doors of their cars unlocked, so nobody will break the windows. That kind of shocked me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads us to talk more generally about the housing crisis in San Francisco and the homelessness that's very present, not only in the famous Tenderloin district, but all over downtown San Francisco.
Right.
And it kind of shocked me. I've already been to San Francisco before. I've noticed it, but I don't know.
You had been before? How long ago?
I've been there maybe, I don't know, 6 years ago or something.
Okay.
And I get the feeling that the situation is worse now.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad even 6 years ago, but I get the feeling it's getting worse.
Yeah, you mentioned sort of like just the amount of folks out in the street, right? And the deplorable conditions in which folks found themselves, right? Homeless folks and in the Tenderloin.
Yeah, that was kind of shocking. It was not only in the Tenderloin, it was all around downtown San Francisco. It was all around the Civic Center, the City Hall. And actually I was passing by San Francisco on Christmas Day, on December 25th. And on that day, obviously, you know, a lot of people are staying in their houses with their families. They're celebrating and everything. And I was on the streets on that day because I was there. And, you know, I don't have any family in San Francisco or anything. I was with a friend of mine. And we were walking through the downtown. And we saw the incredible amount of homeless people. Because on that day, you don't have many tourists or, you know, stores are closed and traffic is slow when people are celebrating Christmas. So you have basically just the homeless people that are visible on the streets, and the streets were full. And that was shocking, you know. And I witnessed some very difficult living conditions. You know, people sleeping on the streets everywhere, blocking the cars to drive by there. I saw a lot of people, you know, taking drugs, heroin, fentanyl, all kinds of opioids, cocaine, speed. You know, we're not just talking about cannabis or tobacco or alcohol here.
Right.
And yeah, there were people living in tents. There were people, you know, masturbating on the streets, having sex in front of everyone, people without clothes. It was kind of disturbing to see all of that.
Yeah.
And it was very disturbing to see it in the officially wealthiest city in the United States, right? Because all we hear about San Francisco is the incredible amount of talented people going there, the Silicon Valley, the startups, the IT technology sector, you know, all those Amazons, Facebooks, Googles, and, you know. Yeah, and it's incredible to see that in the same city where we have all of this going on, you know, in a city that's very famous for being liberal, progressive, you see such a huge homeless population and such a huge housing crisis. Mm-hmm. That's kind of shocking, you know. And you won't see those images in the mainstream media usually, when they talk about San Francisco. Right. You can hear some stories about it, but that's never the image that they show you, at least for people living outside of the United States like I do in Canada.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's so much I'm feeling something, right? There's a tenderness there, and we'll get back to it. I want to there's a lot to unpack there. It's a good place to start, but we'll go ahead and take a short music break, and then we'll get back and then touch on that again, on that topic, and see, because I know Gaia and myself both were up north as well when mm-hmm. we were at school, and so I don't remember it being as bad, and so I think there is some truth to the notion that things are getting worse, right, and more visible, and you mm-hmm. could even see it here locally in the neighboring cities around here, around the office and stuff. So we'll get back to that after this music break. So tune in and join us.
Come close to me, I will be true. I wouldn't stand losing you. Only you can satisfy me. You know how to save me. Be faithful. My face, look into my eyes, you know I care. My heart is set, you are the one for me, but I need your love.
This is Radio Olin, KROJ 101.5 FM on your radio dial, coming to you live from our studios at Puebla Salud in the city of San Fernando. You're listening to Platicando y Mejorando. This is your host, Silverio Pelayo.
This is Milan Sinek.
And Gayana Iskandarian.
Just to recap, we started on a discussion around Milan's recent experience in San Francisco and just encountering the homelessness crisis, among other things, and just sort of the impact it had on you. And I had mentioned that both Guyana and I were up in the Bay Area as well. I myself was in Oakland and Berkeley, and I believe you were in the city of Berkeley as well.
Yeah, I was in Berkeley, but just traveling around the Bay.
Yeah. And I know on our break I had mentioned the recent story on the Moms for Housing, is it? Mm-hmm. I believe in Oakland, and the recent forced removal of these moms who occupied an empty, uninhabited home in Oakland,
mm-hmm.
And the recent forced removal by a militarized police force there in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just you know, the housing crisis, it seems to be pretty bad here in California, but I would assume that it's probably bad everywhere,
mm-hmm.
All around. It's unfortunate, and it's one critical issue among many, right?
Mm-hmm.
As we were speaking earlier, I feel like, and I say this over and over again on these shows, that I feel like we're really living our generation's 60s. And it's not, obviously it's not the 60s, it's not the same, but there is some similarities as far as just the extreme times we're living in,
mm-hmm.
and the sort of apparent cracks in our culture, in our society, as it relates to well-being, right? The well-being of folks, you know, and also the need to address these problems and these issues. It's a difficult time to be living in, but it's also, I think, in a way, it's a blessing because we can potentially contribute to the remaking of our culture and our society, right?
Mm-hmm.
In many ways, right? Not all change happens politically, but you know, in our respective fields and such. So, yeah, I don't know if you all wanted to touch up or touch on just that, the homelessness crisis, or I always like to look at it in a deeper sense, right? Like, if you think about, I often think about how, what is it that, in a person that would, or in people that would allow us as a whole to allow another human being to go without shelter, to go without a safe place to inhabit, to go without food, you know, just to go without dignity. What is it in a culture that allows for its people to live in that way? And I often think about how if one hasn't found a home within oneself, and what I mean by that is if one lacks the ability to live or to inhabit oneself in a good way, right? In other words, can one be oneself and manage, for example, their anger, their fear, their selfishness, these aspects of one's character that oftentimes lead to the degradation and to the complete abuse of another person.
Mm-hmm.
If one could handle oneself in that manner, then it would be likely that one would secure or contribute to the safety and the well-being of others, right? So I know in our discussion too, we talked about Jeff Bezos, and I'm not saying he's this person, but I'm saying somebody who has amassed billions of wealth, And in a city such as San Francisco or in an area such as the Silicon Valley, where there's such a sharp contrast between, you know, the so-called have and the have-nots, or the wealthy and you know, the 1% and mm-hmm. the, you know, we can go on. But and again, I'm not saying that's who he is, but the structures and the culture that supports that type of amassing of wealth, right? Mm-hmm. Really, what are we? We're talking about capitalism, right? Too. So mm-hmm. it's another dynamic here, too, right? Is the economic system in which we live, and the type of values that it imparts and supports.
It just seems to be that so much more worth is put on private property, or property or money and wealth instead of humanity and people. And kind of to go back to what you were saying about the homeless mothers. Sorry, do you mind if I talk or do you want to come back? Okay, so I just wanted to read a few headlines just so y'all can hear about it. It says, homeless mothers with Oakland's Mom for Housing has been forcibly evicted from vacant house. Moms returned to Oakland home to find belongings on street. Mothers who squatted in West Oakland house released from jail. I think oftentimes in this world, and specifically in this society, we blame individual people. Oh, they're homeless because like they're lazy or they can't work. We think of all of these reasons to blame people for their personal troubles. But oftentimes we fail to see how it's not just one person, it's not one isolated case, it's not laziness, it's an overall structure that is creating these problems and that it's making it difficult for people to live and survive and prosper in this country. And I was talking earlier how just in general, like in this exact case, the mothers who were living in a completely evicted empty house, how is it okay for an empty building that no one is staying in? How is it okay for mothers with their children to be jailed for occupying a completely empty building? And that completely points to private property as being more important than a human life, than a mother's life, than a child's life. And I was saying it's very similar, because I know the housing crisis has been going on for a long time, but it's very similar to the recession when people were losing their homes. Banks were completely taking over people's homes and they were laying empty while families were struggling to find housing and they were living on the streets. And it's interesting. I wouldn't say it's interesting. I'd say it's normal that this is happening, because if we look back to the 20th century in the 1930s, when we had the Great Depression, almost exactly the same things were happening. Like people couldn't afford homes, they couldn't afford to live, so they were completely losing their houses. They were living on the streets. In New York, the famous Hoovervilles, which were essentially encampments, were opening up where families were just living in tents. And it's crazy similar to what's happening right now in LA, in San Francisco, and so many other parts of the US. And what's so interesting about the 30s is the Great Depression is when families... So they would use a tactic. So when families were about to be thrown out of the house, they would resist. The community would come together and they would they would remove their belongings. Let's say like the police or the state would come to remove their belongings, they would move them back in. They would break in, they would move them back in, and they would continue to inhabit the homes that they lost because they couldn't afford it. And I don't know. I don't know how much longer people can keep going on just taking it, just taking what's being handed to them, how much longer they can take police brutality, the state not providing them with the needs that they need, like, to survive. So I think it's really important to look back on history. I think it's really important to have these conversations because we can learn from history. Resistance being one of the most important things, and we can further the conversation about what's happening in present day.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right when you say that we need to look at history to learn some lessons. You mentioned the Great Depression of the 30s, mm-hmm. and if we all remember what ended the Great Depression, it was not only, but in part, Roosevelt's New Deal, which was a package of social measures and regulations. And that has been called the New Deal Consensus from the end of the 1930s. And that has been broken down at the beginning of the 1980s, you know, with the presidency of Ronald Reagan mm-hmm. and the Republican Party that deregulated a lot of things in the United States.
Right.
And it's in that decade, during that decade, that we saw, you know, the growing disparities and differences between the wealthy mm-hmm. people and the poorest people.
And it's continued, it's escalated.
And we are still in that deregulated environment. The actual U.S. government, the federal government, President Trump, is still going in, you know, in that same way, deregulation and, you know, abolishing laws or limits, or, you know, to allow the richest and the wealthiest people to get even more rich and more wealthy. I don't know if we can continue in that way, you know. Mm-hmm. Because we have the same problems as in the Great Depression. And the Great Depression was the culmination of that wild capitalism system, you know.
Can we continue to sustain a system that is leaving the 99% in complete poverty? Is this something that we want to continue? Is it benefiting us? We know who it's benefiting, but is it benefiting us?
Right. Great conversation. I'm going to go ahead and take us to another music break. And when we come back, we'll continue the discussion. So hang in there with us and enjoy this music.
This is Radio Lin, KROJ 101.5 FM on your radio dial, coming to you live from our studios at PubliSalud in the city of San Fernando. You're listening to Platicando y Mejorando. This is your host, Silverio Pelayo.
This is Milan Sinek.
And Guyana Iskandarian.
Welcome back. Thank you for joining us if you're just tuning in. We've been discussing a number of things, but mainly focusing on the current housing crisis, the homelessness crisis, the wider implications for that. Right before we went on break, we were discussing the Great Depression, of course, and also the New Deal, and you know, of course, the remedy, right, of the Great Depression. And on our break, we were discussing a number of things, but some things that came up were the eventual rise of social movements right after this period, the civil rights movement, of course, and, mm-hmm. and things of that nature. I know we were asking ourselves how much longer, right? How much longer can we sustain this arrangement, and how much longer will folks live under such a structure and such conditions? I know we were also talking about we mentioned the mothers that had occupied the empty house in Oakland, right? Mm-hmm. Despite all of the, you know, it's easy to feel overwhelmed, right, by all this. But let's not forget that from out of the past struggles, for example, arose a Martin Luther King Jr. Mm-hmm. and a Malcolm X and a Cesar Chavez and a multitude of other leaders. Came out and led, mm-hmm. right, and called and made possible a different world. Mm-hmm. I guess all that to say that there is hope. Mm-hmm. There is hope.
I think it's easy to feel hopeless. I think especially because we're living in a time where we're constantly being bombarded by news, by media, by the internet, by social media, about all of the horrible things that are happening. And it's pretty difficult for us as human beings to mentally and physically process it all. And it's easy to feel very apathetic and give up or hopeless, like feel hopeless. But we have to try to look at these times as a way to fuel our future. Like, we genuinely cannot give up, and the leaders that came before us and the activists that came before us and the movements that have transpired before us are so important, and we're so important, and we can also be really important if we are able to take the right steps and if we are able to be brave enough to do so. So earlier during our break, we were talking about social movements and how after the Great Depression and in the 20th century, so many social movements kind of erupted everywhere, because you kind of get to a point where you just can't take it anymore. You can't take policing. You can't take state repression anymore. There is a limit, and there's only so much you can continue on without breaking. And I think that breaking is one of the most important and beautiful things, because I feel like it's the heartbeat of society in our world. Like, people coming together, moving together, thinking together, mobilizing together is so crucial for the betterment of society. And like Silverio said, we saw it with like the civil rights movement. We saw it with the labor movement that happened. We saw it with so many things in the 20th century. And even now, you can draw a parallel. There are so many movements that are erupting all over the world. I can't even keep up with all of them because there are so many. Like, I know there's some in like Chile. Can y'all name a few that are happening right now? Because
Chile, Bolivia, Venezuela, Algeria, mm-hmm. so on and so forth.
And they're so important. I was talking earlier about my time in college. We were reading these two theorists, Piven and Cloward, and they were they essentially observed and analyzed different social movements throughout history, and they kind of came up with like almost a formula of like how social movements arise and develop. And one of them came from a change in social consciousness. So essentially something that's going to snap you into reality and make you kind of wake up and see everything for as it is. And the second is mobilizing. And I mean, we're seeing it now more than ever. People are coming together and having these really crucial conversations because we have to make change. I know we also talked about how like elections, especially coming up in the US, are also another means for change. However, although I do believe elections are important, and I do think that people should vote and make their needs and their voices be heard, people coming together and mobilizing is so crucial to our society and the betterment of our lives. I don't know. Do y'all have anything to add to that?
I could only add that there's an old Chinese expression saying that from chaos comes opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this whole current situation could be called a kind of chaos, and the opportunities are all over there.
Mm-hmm.
Just need to seize them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to mention that earlier, how it's unfortunate that it takes such a setup and in such a devastating issue or condition, such as, just to name one of so many, but like homelessness or the housing crisis, it's unfortunate that it takes all of these all of this suffering to make change. But if it wasn't for that, then there would possibly be no need for change or a change of social consciousness, as you had mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so you know, when you mentioned like chaos and opportunity, I think it makes me think about how and I often think about this too, is that as I think all of these all of this degradation and these deplorable conditions, the lack of humanity and such and so on and so forth, we as humanity, it seems, have forgotten some crucial and key aspects of what it is to be human, what it is to be, for example, a caretaker of Mother Earth, right? Which is mm-hmm. another issue that we haven't mentioned, but the pending ecological doom, right? Or destruction of our environment. You know, I often think about the old ways, right? Those of the ancestors, right? And the ways in which they lived and all the wisdom that they held. And it, again, it's not to say, I don't want to say that it was, that it's perfect, but, there's just we're missing some stuff here, right? Like we've forgotten some stuff, as it relates to how to be oneself and how to treat others and how to make the best of essentially a paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we think about scarcity, the income inequality, poverty, there's no reason why that should exist. Because we live in an abundant world and an abundant existence. And all you have to do is look out towards nature and see how nature is naturally abundant and naturally gives and provides.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's possible for us as humanity and culture to do the same. To there's more than enough to go around for everybody. There's no reason, no need for there to be a Jeff Bezos with or the Rothschilds or whatever with billions of dollars and then, you know, folks in the Tenderloin or just here, you know, in Skid Row living in complete poverty. And so, yeah, there's some fundamental lessons and wisdom that we as humanity have forgotten, that the, you know, those that came before us understood. And that to me personally, that's something that's very relevant when it comes to the, you know, this topic or these topics or just living life, is that, you know, it's not necessarily necessary to reinvent the wheel, but sometimes it takes taking a look back to see how folks lived, you know, and which brings up a whole nother discussion that I think we had mentioned previously. I think yesterday was around, and this can be a separate podcast show because this might veer us off into another direction. But just the idea of like epistemology, right? And what knowledge is valued, and mm-hmm. and what knowledge is cast aside as perhaps superstition or mm-hmm. folklore or non-scientific or not logical, of value or yeah. logical or of use. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think more and more, and we're going to see more of it, we'll be seeing folks returning to those old ways. Because again, I don't know how much more we can sustain this setup, right? With, you know, I don't know, you know, what's the, I don't know, what are some theories, I don't know, whatever, you know what I mean, like the dominant mm-hmm. paradigm that's essentially upholding all these structures, right? Whatever the economics and such and so on and so forth, right? And again, I don't want to say that there isn't value in all that, right? But there's ways to keep intact our own self-dignity and to have others in mind. There's a way in which we can build, you know, blueprints and schemes to organize ourselves that make it so that everyone thrives, and we don't have, you know, we don't have to suffer the potential doom of an ecological crisis, to name one, you know, of many.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I feel like oftentimes we're convinced that it's one or the other. You have to pick one or the other. It's like, why can't we have both? Why can't we have it all? Why can't we have a holistic society that maybe puts worth in politics or economy, but also honors tradition and culture and history and community, essentially?
And you know what's crazy? Is that really what we're talking about is altruism, right? And mm-hmm. working together and cooperate. But it's crazy to think that there's folks out there that really stick to the idea, this individualist idea of like, pick yourself up from your bootstraps. And you were mentioning earlier about how we oftentimes folks tend to blame, for example, somebody who's homeless or whatever. And again, it's not to say that folks don't have their faults, but again, we don't exist in a vacuum. Like our individual lives don't exist in a vacuum, right? Or the this notion that, you know, I'm wealthy and super wealthy because of all my hard work, mm-hmm. all my hard work. But there's so many threads that bind us together, because your hard work isn't just your hard work. It's in relation and in cooperation with so many other people, right? Whether you're a CEO of a company or a founder of a company or whatever, you didn't do that alone. It took other people to help you build your dream. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's just crazy to think that there's people that, and it's sad in a way, because I can kind of see how somebody can get to that point. It must be a very lonely, mm-hmm. there's a lot of hardship behind that as well. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. And to go off what you're saying, I always think about it this way, like even at an individual level, like for example, me, like I'm a first generation college graduate. And oftentimes people say, you did it. And yeah, I did do it, but I didn't do it alone. Like I had so much help from friends, from professors, my family, my support system. Like it's literally impossible to get to a point in your life without community and without help and without people pushing you and guiding you along. It's just impossible. And if we really want to talk about these structures, the US, for example, we always talk about how the US is the richest country or the best country. And are we really, though? And if we are, how did we get here? Are we destined by some otherworldly being? Are we that amazing? Or was it built on the backs of a lot of people and exploitation?
I would add the whipped, the whipped backs of other people, right? Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Again, which could be another topic for another podcast, but I mean, you're absolutely right. And maybe that's, I think maybe at fundamentally that's part of what it is we've forgotten, right? Is which oftentimes traditional peoples completely understand, is the interweaving of everything and everyone, and that it's not just about one single aspect, but it's really everything in concert. Mm. Everything in concert, and everything's tied, right? Everything's a web. All these pending catastrophes are related to this forgetting of this very important, mm-hmm. this wisdom that nothing happens on its own. It's everything's intertwined. Mm-hmm. Capitalism is very much not that. It uses everybody, mm-hmm. right? But it doesn't equally distribute the fruits of everybody's labor, right? And then of course there's tons of justifications, right? Or the trickle down theory and such, or whatever,
proven not to be working, just to say. And kind of to even draw more evidence of how it doesn't work is, for example, once again in the US, there is this sort of arrogance that we deserve to be the best, or we are the best. And if you really think about it, the US was very profitable for a very long time. If we look at it from the 20th century up to the point of the Great Depression, we had about 150 years of prosperity, 150 years of money and growth. But how did we get the prosperity? Is it because we're just that amazing? Or is it because we had 150 years of free labor from black slaves in the United States? The prosperity of the US happened because they had free labor, not because they're grand, not because they're amazing, not because God destined it to be so, but because we exploited people and then we made money off their backs, whipped backs, as Silverio said it, and now we're continuing to be complicit in the slavery and the genocide of exploited peoples of this land.
It's not only about the slavery, it's also about exploited cheap labor.
Yeah.
You know, all the Latinos coming here, are the Asian populations, all the Eastern European immigrants that populated the Midwest, you know, Polish, Russians, mm-hmm. Jewish, Scandinavians, Italians, Irish, you know. This country was built on the backs of that kind of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it's interesting, right? Because our team, right, has been working on flavored tobacco, right? And
yeah.
when I go sometimes to some of the meetings or whatever, and folks, like the big elephant in the room, I feel like oftentimes in some of the discussions is our economic system, right? Because I feel like here we are, you have folks, you know, we all have the need to live and exist, right? To eat, to have shelter, clothing and such, and you know, our necessities, and there's the need for money, right? To be able to secure these things. So an issue, for example, like vaping or just even just the selling of tobacco products, for example, and really it goes beyond that, right, to a number of things, right, that are in some ways very or maybe always detrimental to our own health. So you have folks on one side that have these needs and they need to survive, and so they're selling these products to the consumers who then, you know, are inflicting themselves with the harms, right? It's like you have a system that upholds this dynamic where you have somebody peddling poison because, you know, they need a job to survive, and then you have somebody who's consuming that, and then you have folks like us who are saying we got to stop this dynamic, and but then you have the store owner, for example, saying, well, what am I gonna do? Like, if I can't, you know. So it's just it's so convoluted, and housing, right? You know, there's tons of empty homes out there with nobody living in them, and there's so many people out on the streets, and all it takes is to take that family from the street and you put them in that empty home, you close the door, and they get, you know, you bring them food, and this is everywhere and all around the country, and empty homes and people out on the street, and all we need to do is just take them from the street and put them in the home, but we can't. Why? Because that home is owned by some bank or some individual, and if there's no flow of money there, then that won't, you know what I mean? And it's like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that dignity and goodwill and altruism, there's so many barriers and blocks, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And in many ways, these structures uphold and contribute to the worst of us, to the worst in us, right? It's just so wacky to me.
Yeah,
such a wacky setup.
Because altruism has no cost.
Right.
Caring for others has no cost. But now we're living in this climate where apparently we're supposed to monetize it. It should, if we're not getting some kind of benefit from it in the form of like money, property, or wealth, it's not worth doing. It's just kind of, if you look at it very simply and you take out all of the little, all of the other structural stuff, like, it's just kind of crazy how you just can't be kind if you're not getting some kind of benefit from it.
Yeah. Great discussion. Gonna go ahead and take our last, we'll have a break, music break. We'll come back and then we'll sign off.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, I hope you enjoy this music break. Stick with us and we'll continue this conversation.
Manasuayo.
This is Radio Olin, KROJ 101.5 FM on your radio dial, coming to you live from our studios at Puebla Salud in the city of San Fernando. You're listening to Platicando y Mejorando. This is your host, Silverio Pelayo.
This is Milan Sinek.
And Guyana Iskandarian.
Thank you for sticking with us, for tuning in. This was a great discussion. Thank you all for joining me. Milan, thank you for joining us all the way from Canada. It's great having you on the show.
Thanks for inviting me. Yeah,
and very heavy conversation. Definitely would like to continue it at some point. Mm-hmm. So much to unpack there. So many more topics to discuss. I don't know if you have any last words before we sign off here.
No, thank you for this great discussion. Great conversation today, and hopefully we'll have some more episodes to it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I'd say just, even to myself, I'm saying this to myself too, reflect on your community, on your country, like this world, and just try to be better and care for each other.
Awesome. Good way to end the show. Again, thank you. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for your support, and we'll catch you next weekend.